is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Ori.
Hi.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
So normally we'd be tuning in right now for Transformational Learning with Diane Hill, and that's not what's happening today. Diane is here, but she's being called to take her show to another level, and we're going to talk about that today. So let's see if we've got Diane on the board before I start talking to myself. Diane, are you there?
Yes, I am. Nicole.
Yay. Hello. Good to hear your voice. So, yeah, we're just going to talk about what's happening, the transformation of the show itself, and going deeper. So what is going to be the name of the show moving forward for you?
Well, Nicole, I decided that I was going to focus from here on in on Indigenous people's perspective.
Beautiful.
And in doing so, I just wanted to... Yeah, it was just to broaden, I think, some of the topics that we could focus on from North American Native people, but also other Indigenous people and other perspectives. And it was a way of bringing a different worldview, a different philosophy forward that would help listeners and help people just generally interested in North American Indian culture. Help them sort of get an introduction to what it is that we believe, how we work, how we see the world, and how we take care of ourselves on a number of levels. So it wasn't just focusing on the healing, which is what transformational learning was about, because certainly that's a big part of how we live and Native people live and work. But I wanted to do a little bit more in terms of coverage of attitudes and values and beliefs that we had. And there isn't a whole lot written down from Native people, by Native people, for Native people, but even for the general public. So I just thought I wanted to broaden my scope of coverage over the next coming months.
Yes. Well, you know, if there's very little like this out there that bridges the gap between the different cultures as well. Why don't you give people an idea of your lineage, your background, and connection to this topic?
Sure. I'm born and raised on the Six Nations Indian Reserve, which is near Toronto. We're just about an hour and a half south of Toronto, Ontario. And we call ourselves, the community here is called Six Nations of the Grand River Territory. Literally along the Grand River, there is a river that was a land grant originally given to Six Nations people back in the 1800s. It was a deed given to Six Nations people in return for their loyalty in serving the British during the war around the 1812, in those periods of time, before there was an actual border between Canada and the United States. So my great-great-great-great-grandfather was Joseph Brant, and he was one of the key players in historical times that sided with the British against what was then, they called the Americans, who were really British in the beginning, but they switched over to their own choice of identity as Americans. And so there were lots of my people who were living on the New York State side that sided with Joseph Brant and fought in those various wars against the Americans as the border was getting created between Canada and the United States. So I'm descended from that Joseph Brant. He was a Mohawk. He was also well-educated. He was a captain in the British Army. he served in a number of capacities and even learned English and took on certain roles for himself in a lot of ways. And so he led the group that followed him and followed those decisions and choices, and ended up here being given a Haldimand deed, they call it, a land grant near present-day Brant Fort. So that little backstory was important to tell you, Nicole, because the city of Brant Fort is actually named after my great-great-great-great-grandfather, Joseph Brant. It's the place when the people arrived here where Brant forded the river. That's an old term, an old British term, referring how they crossed the river. So the city of Brant Ford is actually sitting on that Grand River. And so that river is very much part of the land agreement that was made for Six Nations people living here in Ontario. And the original grant was from 6 miles either side of the river from its source, which is near Fergus, Ontario, to the mouth, which is just past Dunville in a place called Port Maitland, where the Grand River empties into Lake Erie. So that was a huge, huge, huge land grant back then. And it was whittled away through fraud and different kinds of activities over the years. But this is where my people and my ancestors made our home. So I'm descended as a Mohawk, and my clan, which dates back to the Mohawk River Valley, is known as a Bear. So I'm a Bear clan member, and I currently reside at this as a Mohawk woman. Mohawk Nation, that's the name the British gave us. The English called us Mohawks. In our own language, we called ourselves Ginyangahaga people, which was the people of the Flint. And we settled here along the Six Nations of the Grand River in the 1780s.
Wow.
Oh, sorry, 1870s. I'm getting my numbers backed up.
It was an amazing story about your great. I forgot how many greats there were in there, but your grandfather.
Yeah, there should have been five. I was trying to count them, but I wasn't sure.
So how did you become passionate about sharing the teachings?
Well, it was a long journey, Nicole, because it wasn't acceptable to share Native cultural teachings or any of the practices or rituals. And I mean that in terms of my lifetime. Prior to me, there were ethnohistorians and lots of anthropologists and historians in general writing about Six Nations culture and people. And so we're one of the most, probably the most, I would say, well-documented people. So there are collections of writings and collections on cultural studies and things dating back prior to my time that were actually kept in museums, and they're still there. Some, the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, and the Museum of Man in Ottawa. There's the Albany, New York Museum, and then there's museums and libraries in the Newbery Library in Chicago. So there were lots of American historians writing, because that's where we originated from in the beginning. So the original homelands for my people are in New York State, and they extend from the river at Niagara Falls from Niagara Falls all the way east to the Hudson River Valley and down along the Mohawk River Valley in New York State. So there are still Mohawk people, the Five Nations, which originally we were called before we became Six Nations, it added the Tuscarora Nation to our group. Those people those relatives are still there, spread across from Niagara Falls to New York City, down towards the Hudson River into the Catskills Mountains. So there's a bunch of us here in Six Nations, in Ontario, but the majority of people are still living in New York State.
But the resistance to sharing information exchange and stuff, that's been in more recent lifetimes?
Yeah, in more recent times. So the back then, like you can research Six Nations or Iroquois or Haudenosaunee people. That part is kind of fairly easy to do. What was harder to do was to actually come in and meet with the people and take part in ceremonies and practices here on the reserve itself. To this day, that's still that way. They're not open. So the ceremonies are not open to outsiders to come in here. You would have to be a member of Six Nations or a Six Nations community if you were even living on the other side of the border in the United States. They welcome our own people, but in terms of sharing cultural practice or cultural ceremonies or even some of the cultural philosophies, if you were to get that from individuals without going to a library, that would be very difficult. So I took it upon myself to start it to learn on my own. And as I started to learn, I was coming against other Native people who were telling me that even our own children were not being given the full kind of teachings and how rich and how like in cultural beliefs and the practices and the worldview and the way that we see the world and the way we interact with the world, that cultural perspective or that cultural philosophy wasn't being shared even generally, even in my own community, in favor of the mainstream education. It was mainstream education that seemed to be taking the priority, and I believe that had a lot to do with the impact of the residential school system. That's why the people became not that open, because of that negative aspect of history.
Yes. I mean, understandably, to become protective of that which is sacred, right?
Exactly. And that was the view that to this day, that view still persists to this day. And it's kind of sad in a way, because the culture is such rich with meaning and practices and belief systems and philosophy that actually lend itself to a really high level of spiritual practice and human development and expansion of people's consciousness and working with the spirit as a great law of peace, right? And my people are known for that great law of peace. And so those practices and that way of thinking and that way of believing are carried in those stories and carried in the oral traditions. They're written down. They're like it's available, but people weren't bringing it forward and actually applying it to themselves personally in a way that would help to nourish the culture in a very broad sense. There are people and families here that have never given up those practices and those ways, and they still teach them to their children, and they still adhere to the ceremonial practices. There are people here that are very, very well-versed in the cultural traditions and languages. But the vast majority, I would have to say, struggle, and because they weren't exposed. And so I was one of those people that, even though I have this long lineage that dates back, in my particular instance, I still struggle to learn about it, because my people and my family tended to follow a Christian view because they entered into the church. Now, not every family did, but mine did. And so they kept the clan, which was interesting. They kept their clan knowledge, but they let go of the longhouse knowledge, which is the where the traditional practices and ceremonies are still performed to this day. So when you're raised in a community like that, you're left behind, and you grow up not knowing that you're missing anything until you start to engage with other people in your community. And then you start to realize you don't know that much. You don't know anything about your own people. And, you know, you don't speak the language. You end up going to an Anglican church or a Baptist church. You find other ways of relating, and which are more mainstream than they are your own. And so that's what happened to me. I really got, my family got kind of lost, and that, I remember my sister saying to me one day, she says, we're more like white people than we are Indians. When she was right. Yeah, and she was right. So I started to get curious, and I started to make it my business after having an experience where I was questioned in that way, like, what makes you different as a Native person? And I really couldn't answer it well, and it was very embarrassing. And so I needed to come to grips with my own self and my own history and my own family history, and to discover why didn't I know? Where was the lack of transmission of that knowledge, and what did I have to do to start learning, and how would I then start to bring that back and make it real in such a way that it would apply to my life, and then that I could use it to help support me in my own growth and my own development and the development of my own son and people going forward, right? Grandchildren going forward. So it was a very conscious choice to learn about it. But I didn't choose that until I was in my late 20s.
So you started learning for you. At what point did you take the next bold step of choosing to share sacred knowledge with other cultures?
I started to realize when I started to really understand the impact of colonization on the thinking, on the beliefs, and on how people thought, on their thought processes. And when I really started to pay attention to the impact that colonization had on the psychology of people, on how they thought and their thinking was more mainstream than it was Native. And I started to realize that had a really far-reaching effect, that if you didn't preempt that thought process, then you would have people, and they used to say this when I was growing up, you would say, here are people who are brown on the outside, right? They would say red or brown on the outside, but they'd be white on the inside. And what they were referring to in the community was how people would think and how they would relate and how their behaviors were and how they would work and how they would treat other people. And so the thought process and those belief systems were very much Western or mainstream ideas and practices and assumptions about how human beings are and the way that the world works. And I started to realize that if that kept going, we were going to start losing who we really were. And what did it really mean to be a Native person, a Native woman? You know, what did it mean to have a clan or a nation? Or what did it mean to practice connection to the world and the land and the environment? And what did that mean for healing and wellness and our own, even as far as extending into our economics and how we would make a way of life for ourselves? So I started to realize that if I didn't start to create methods and plans and programs and doing some educational work, that people would start to forget. And not because, you know, they were against learning Native culture. It's because they didn't know any other way. They didn't have an alternative to how they were being raised. So I had to do, I had to look at myself first, because I was raised that way too. I was one of the colonized, and I went to university and I went to higher education, and that whole process started to change my thinking, change my worldview, so that now I had to learn how to, and it was funny because I didn't get the notion of decolonizing myself until I actually got to the master's level of a university system. So I went through all my 3 years of undergraduate study believing in what I was being taught and thinking that that was the way of the world, and completely oblivious to another, my own culture and how my own culture looked at the world and would set up ourselves for learning and behaving. I just was amazed when I finally woke up one day and I realized that, wow, and you know, I'm not really, you know, I'm not really native. I'm thinking, I'm looking like a native. I have brown skin and brown eyes and brown hair, but my thought patterns were very, very non-native, very Western, very mainstream. I mean, some people would say, yeah, you're like a white person. So I had to wake up first before I could even begin to wake up anybody else and see the importance of what education did. Was it socialized me and conditioned me to be a completely, to think like a European, to think like a mainstream Western person. And I didn't know that that happened to me until I got questioned one day at work. About what made me different as a Native people and as a Native person. Like, do you have a different religion? Do you have a different language? And the answer was yes, yes, but what is it? And I couldn't answer. So that was a time when I didn't even know my feelings, let alone know myself. And so I got angry in that meeting and came home and asked my mother, like, why didn't you teach us? But it really wasn't even anger that I was feeling in that meeting. It would take me another bunch of years later to realize that what I was feeling that day was shame. I was ashamed that I didn't know. So I didn't even understand emotions. That wasn't there. I didn't understand feelings. I didn't understand that that was a thing even. And it was so crazy because I had finished a 3-year undergraduate degree at university, and my major areas of study was sociology and psychology. And I never learned anything about colonization except till I got, once I got, like I said, I had to get to the master's level where I had to start studying concepts about how people's perspectives were culturally conditioned to think and believe in a certain way. And they called that education, right? That education itself was social conditioning, cultural conditioning, but not in a native sense. It was culturally conditioning people to think like a mainstream person. And that's when I started to realize, the wheels started to shift in me. And then I had to start learning about such things as perspective transformation. And how could I transform my own perspective? What would it take to help me change my thinking so that my thinking was no longer, I was no longer adhering to the values, attitudes, and beliefs of the people who I was teaching me, like mainstream culture? How could I switch that so that I could now embrace my own people's culture? Well, then that was a kind of another education process that I had to undergo. So some people would call it unlearning, or some people would call it decolonizing your own mind. But for me, it was unlearning what I learned in the mainstream schools, and I had to relearn a completely different way of viewing the world that was oftentimes in contradiction to what the mainstream people were teaching me in terms of how the world worked.
Yeah. How did you resolve some of those issues?
That's what led me into the healing process next. That the only way I could do it was that I had to, the only way that I could switch up beliefs, where I had to learn how to release the emotional anchors that were holding those belief systems in place. So it had to be a healing process for me to unlearn, because when you challenge somebody on their beliefs, people hold on to that beliefs with great the ego especially, holds on to those beliefs, because those beliefs are what is informing you and making you feel safe and giving you a reason for living in the world. And if you challenge somebody's belief system and you say, well, you know what you believe there, that's not quite right. That isn't the way that the world works. The ego takes quite offense. And it gets very offensive and defensive, and then the argument starts around belief systems. And so you don't want to engage a person at that level of belief system. You can challenge the belief system, but they have to become aware that there's an emotional anchor, an emotional attachment that people have to believing that way. And if you can find that emotional anchor and you can have the person become aware and release it, then that person is more likely to do a shift in thinking, a shift in belief system, and to let, with more, what they call, with more information, they can let the old belief die and then incorporate a new belief. And in doing that, it affected the emotional nervous system in the body. And that's why I started to go into healing. Because I realized there's theories for these things in terms of education and self-reflection, self-awareness, those processes. But their actual process is called perspective transformation, and it requires an emotional release of the emotions that are anchoring and attaching you to those belief systems. That's why I went into healing next.
So where are you at with it all, current day?
So the current place where I'm at now is that I've made quite a big shift from what I used to believe, and I've stepped into more of my own culture's vision and view of reality, which became a very spiritual direction. So we believe that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. So we were looking at, so that meant that you had to understand what the spiritual connection that Native people had to the land, to the water, to each other, to the Creator, to people in general, to each other in general. And what did that mean? What did it mean to be spiritually connected, spiritually aware, spiritually conscious? What did that mean in terms of the way that I had been operating? And the way I was operating before is that spirit, which to me was like ghosts and things that went bump in the night. And, you know, I was educated in a culture, by a culture, an education system that didn't believe in these things, that anything spiritual was hocus pocus and woo-hoo and had no grounding in reason and rational ways of moving through the world. And then when I stepped back into my own culture, it was all spiritually focused. It was all learning how to work with energy and perceiving things and feeling things and working with things that you couldn't see. And one of the biggest things that people had trouble seeing was is you couldn't really see a feeling. You couldn't see an emotion, yet it was the emotions that were at work and coupled with the belief system that was driving the behavior. And I had to finally start looking at spirit as simply a combination of different forms of energy. And when I started to take an energy perspective, then that opened up a whole nother doorway, which went into the energy sciences. And how did, and this is a long journey I'm talking about, but now we teach spiritual practice through teaching people and introducing them to energy. And so if you can take a simple exercise, like they call them dowsing rods, and if you can hold those metal rods in your hand, or you know it, and you can make them move, and you can program them, and find water, and you can detect energy in another person that's walking towards you, and have a good intention or negative intention. When you can hold those dowsing rods and watch it work, it challenges the belief systems around the things that you can't see, because most people grow up thinking, well, what's real is what I can see and feel and touch and manipulate in a physical sense. But when you start manipulating things without touching them, and you're using tools like dowsing rods to detect energies in other people that might not be very welcoming or very positive energies, and you can do both positive and negative energies, it started to challenge people and the belief systems about what's real. And so you start to realize soon enough in working with these energy games that the things you can't see are equally real, and that the things you can perceive through your feelings and through your emotional side, through the senses, of taste and touch and smell and hear, and the big one is feeling. If you can start to work with that energy and realize that that energy is who we are as a spiritual being having a human experience, that opens up a very broad and a very different worldview and a different way of perceiving oneself as a human being. Suddenly we're spiritual beings and we're here having a human experience, and neither one of those two things are well understood.
I like how you explain that, the unseen being just as real. But you have to have a direct experience with it to know it, really, don't we?
And there were lots of things that people started to come forward with, even dreams, simple as having a dream and starting to consider that dreams were not just the body's way of downloading the day's activities and sorting it all out for you in your sleep. That actually dreams were information downloads that were coming from beyond the human experience. And sometimes you could get information that would come into a dream and take the form of a premonition of something going to happen. And then people would start to notice through their dreams that, wow, something else is going on here because, you know, I dreamt this was going to happen and it did. And when mm-hmm. people have those experiences, they challenge the normal reality of how information comes to us, which is not just through a mental cognitive thought process. I'm not sitting there thinking it up on purpose, but it's something that's coming to me, and I seem to have this way of knowing things, which now led into the intuition. And I can now use the intuition in such a way that it's going to also now help me to determine, not logically, but through a feeling sense, what I need to do next or where I need to go, or even to understand sometimes why things are happening. It would come to you intuitively as opposed to something that you sat there and actually figured out through a logical, rational thought process. A lot of intuitive work is not that rational.
Rational, well, you just need a different word than rational, I think. Rational is a little too judgy. not very grounded on the balance scale. So what kind of things are you going to incorporate in the new and improved next evolution of your show here?
Well, I think what we're talking about right now is a really good springboard. I think the differences between Indigenous people's belief systems versus mainstream Western belief systems, you know, I think what, you know, having that kind of conversation or bringing on guests who can kind of bring that forward from their own experience, whether it be community-based. Some of my friends are academics, like they've studied it and they've written PhD theses on things and that are pertaining to Native people's views and understanding of things, just even creation stories, for example. There are Native creation stories that are not like the Bible's book of Adam and Eve. Like, there's that story of creation. But there are other creation stories and other ways that Native people tell, right, in their oral tradition, and their ways of understanding how they came into being and how we collectively came in, if you're looking at a tribal or collective relationship between people. And it's really nice to know that creation stories differ, you know, across the board, depending on the people and their location, geographic location, where they make their home, how they're, if they're available, how their language can be broken down to see and understand ways of the world. I think that my last shows in transformational learning were touching on some of those things with the people who were able to decipher language. I remember one show with Doug George, who studies language, Ojibwe language, and how he was able to break down words. And in breaking down those words, you get a completely different way of understanding how everything is related to one another. And that, those are kinds of topics and things that I would like to revisit, because it brings a general, a different way of viewing things, a different perspective that really lends itself to helping people to become more kind, more connected to the land, more relational. And I mean, it's all about relationships for us. And it would help us to, you know, sort, not just sort out ourselves, but it also helps other people understand what it means, what North American Native people are about as well. Because there's not a lot written, most people question, right, and are curious. And I think people are more recently curious about Native people than ever before. I know my son, my son Jordan, who oftentimes he would say, you know, it's Native people's time to shine. And you're seeing more and more Native performers on TV, in plays. There's more Native content coming on in movies and videos and that type of media. And so from that perspective, I think he's correct. It's time for us to share some of these things and how to relate to the land, not use the land for capitalistic, what we call capitalistic purposes, but can you build businesses and can you develop yourself in such a way that it helps other people take care of and support and build relationships that are of a positive, more nurturing way of moving through the world, as opposed to an individualistic way of trying to, you know, get ahead of the Joneses. I remember people saying when I was growing up, they said, you know, people would try to outdo the other ones in competitive, but not so much being competitive, but can we build another society that is more communal and more supportive of each other, as opposed to being so competitive. So these kinds of ideas, I think it's time for people to listen and to be instructed and to take advantage, I think, of learning another perspective of being, because there's so many people that are being sick and not well, and there's lots of issues of mental health and suicide and those kinds of things that are affecting people. I think if we can go a little bit broader than just the healing of those issues into looking at a completely way of, another way of doing business, for example, if you're creating companies that can be truly supportive of community development as opposed to just building a business. I think that those are the things that I want to explore, even for myself. And these are ideas that I think need to come out onto the airwaves, so to speak, so that others can realize that it isn't just one way of doing business or one way of doing things, that there are many ways of doing things. And some of those ways can be truly self-sustaining, but in a way that supports other people as well.
Exactly. Yes. Oh, my gosh. This is why I was so excited about your show. I mean, you're bringing something forward that needs to be, you know, sad, and you had to go and retrieve what was knowledge was taken from you and relearn it, and then deciding to share and you know, put it out there for other cultures and communities as well as your own. It's such an amazing story. I am looking at the clock, and we had you doing some special homework for the last chunk of the show.
Oh, yes.
You have your notes and all that already, because I want to give you a full, you know, 10, 15 minutes on your shameless self-promotion, because I know you're doing some amazing new projects, and we want to hear all about them.
Great. Well, one of the things that I wanted to mention first was that we started to revise my website. So now there are some of these, this one new project that I'm doing, you can find it there. It's a partnership with Syracuse University out of New York State. And that's found on my website at www.dianehill.net. So it's Diane with one N. So it's dianehill.net. And on there, when you click on my website, you'll see my picture of myself, and you'll see my bio. But if you scroll down, you'll see these blue boxes. And on one of the blue boxes, it talks about this weekend workshop on Indigenous healing practices that are coming up. So it's a weekend of Indigenous healing, they're calling it. And it's taking place in the Middlebrook Conference Center, which is located on the Blue Mountain Lake in the Adirondack Mountains of New York State. I have a hard time saying that word. And the Adirondack Mountains are the original homeland for where my people, the Mohawk people, held territory in the Adirondack Mountains. So it was really exciting for me to be able to go back to that area, and then to participate with Syracuse University in this Indigenous Healing Weekend workshop. So they're calling it Sacred Self Awakening. And it's just as the title said, it's a 3.5-day workshop that will present Indigenous healing knowledge and Indigenous healing practices that will help people to awaken to their own, like to look inside and to awaken to their own self. And so it's a workshop that will help people learn Indigenous healing practices, but it'll also help you to learn how to focus on yourself and how to identify the things that are important to you in terms of how to shift your energy and to support not just your own self-awareness, but to support how you can share and support others. So it's done in a very supportive environment, the workshop itself. People will have a chance to explore Indigenous cultural practices as we're going to present them. And we're going to help you discover how to get started with your own focus on self-awakening, self-development. And so you'll be given a swag bag, they call it, with personalized tools. You'll be given a smudge stick, and you'll be given some a journal and a way to start. We'll give you practices so that you can start to look inside and have some meditative, reflective time. And we're going to begin that process of self-awareness, self-development, self-empowerment by putting it in a context of the worldview of what the nature of a human being is from an Indigenous person's perspective. Here's a human being who's a spiritual being having a human experience. So we're going to give that understanding and spend some time with that. And people will also, because to look inside, you have to have courage, because it means to look inside, you have to sometimes bump up against some scary, painful memories. So we're going to apply some trauma-informed care techniques as well for individuals who want to take that journey into their personal empowerment and help them reach a way of becoming more clear of who you are and what you're here to do and how you're going to move through the world and what your purpose might be. We give you techniques to do that.
Wow, it sounds amazing. I wish I could go.
Yeah. I wish you could come too. I mean, the more the merrier, right? But yeah. And
amazing.
So that workshop's going to be delivered by myself and my son, Desagwa Daniels. His Mohawk name, Desagwa Daniels, means he's changes things. And so his energy and his own journey to his self awareness through self-awareness, self-development, self-awakening has really helped him to step into his name, Desagwa Daniels, say his Mohawk name, of bringing about change, not just for himself, but for his own people. And my name is, and others, and people in general, my name is Gajichawak, which in Mohawk means the shaking of flowers, which when you understand the culture, you know that the shaking of flowers is moving through a basket that doesn't have corn kernels in the making of soup, which is one of our medicines, and the white corn. It's the making of flowers and medicine that's coming from the flowers of plants. So even my name, Gajichawak, and being able to step into being like some of the strongest medicines for the wellness of people comes from the flowers of plants. And so that's what my name means. And so we're going to be bringing this kind of understanding forward to the participants in the workshop. And it's really interesting because it's anticipated that the majority of people who are going to be attending will be not Native people, but non-Native people. And of course, we hope to have a mixture, but right now that seems to be people are picking it up, or those who are interested in learning these kinds of concepts and things.
That was actually going to be my next question, that non-Native people are allowed to attend. It's not normally done, you know?
No, it's not normally done. And this workshop was actually, because of the partnership with Syracuse University and because of their push to educate, like Syracuse University is situated on Onondaga territory, on Onondaga Nation's land. And one of the things that Syracuse University did is they designed a package called the Haudenosaunee Promise, which provides free education to individuals who are of Six Nations Haudenosaunee descent. Whether you live in Canada or the United States, doesn't matter. As long as you can apply to the university at Syracuse and you're on a regular basis and on the regular platform of entry and you gain entry on your own merits, then the university will recognize that and provide you with free tuition and during the time that you're taking whatever program of study with them. So that's the promise they made to educate Haudenosaunee people. But in the bigger scheme now, because of different individuals who are working at the university, they're now offering it to non-Native people for the same reason that I was speaking about earlier, is that we all need to learn a different perspective for living in the world and living on the planet and how we treat the planet and how we treat each other. And so Syracuse really opened their doors to saying, okay, we're gonna try a Native North American Indian presenter. We've never done it before, but we're gonna try it. And I'm really happy to say that they through friends and through common individuals that we knew, that I know, and that Syracuse employs, they brought up my name, and I went to a couple of interviews and meetings, and I was selected so as this year's retreat presenter. They only do a retreat once a year in August, and I won, and myself and my son Jordan, we won that slot for this year's presenters. We were selected as this year's presenters.
Wow. Well, that's awesome. I'm sure it's going to go really well. How can people get a hold of you about inquiring about attending this Indigenous Healing course?
They go to my website, Nicole, at dianehill.net. you're going to click on the box there that says featured program, upcoming featured program. It will say Indigenous Healing Weekend, Syracuse University. And when you click on that box on my website, it'll open up another page that you then click again, and it'll take you right into the Syracuse University page, web page. And there you can register for the workshop. And so right now, the pricing is there. Everything's there that you need to know. It's an all-inclusive. So that means when you sign up for the workshop, you're going to stay on site because it's about an hour away from anything. So you're in the mountains, you're on the lake, and you're at the resort. So your meals will be provided. Your accommodation is provided there, and it's available at different rates depending on how you want to stay. You can share a room or not share a room. You'll take your meals there, and then you'll be provided with the workshop for 3.5 days. And at the end, you'll even be provided with a box lunch to take home for your travel.
Beautiful. Love it. Diane Hill is all linked up at newsforthesoul.com, too. You can find out more about that course there as well. And Diane, any idea who's first up on your new and improved radio show next show?
Well, because I'm partial to family, I was hoping that I could get Jordan to redo his new program, because there's some exciting development there that Jordan and I are involved with in terms of the design of an educational app for it's going to serve a number of purposes. But we've just recently partnered with a couple of businesses and organizations, and we're looking at the development of an app that will help people to begin that process of learning and changing their perspective and understanding, you know, themselves. So the first course off on that app under Real School, that's Jordan's business name, Real School, where Jordan's going to talk a little bit about that. And I just hope he would start promoting the app because funders and people now were starting to come into the development. So I guess you would say the full major development of that app after a year of working behind the scenes and quietly deciding whether we could even make that happen and how would it happen in a virtual world. So we're becoming educational apps. You know, apps are kind of the way that young people and, people in general tend to spend a lot of time on their phone. So the thinking was is that if you're going to spend all that time on your phone, you might as well be learning something useful.
Yep. Well, look forward to hearing more about that next show. And you guys are into all kinds of exciting projects and doing great work. It's, I'm excited about the new evolution of your show and things to come. Indigenous People's Perspectives with Diane Hill. She'll be back in 2 weeks diving in deeper. Thanks, Diane.
Thanks, Nicole.
All right. Love and Bye-bye. Healing Solutions with Catherine Gill is next, and Diane is all linked up at newsforthesoul.com. We're back with more after this.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.